If you're looking for the perfect gift, you're covered with a gift that's sure to wow. Taste of Chicago ships Lou Malnati's legendary deep dish pizzas nationwide. Plus, they ship other Windy City favorites too. Visit tasteofchicago.com to order today.
Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Did I say that right? So some of you have written me and said, I say it with too much enthusiasm too early in the morning. On the other hand, some of you have said, I'm yelling, good morning! On the other hand, now we have three hands, some of you say, it's just perfect. Thank you for your enthusiasm. I don't know what to do. How about if I just say, hi, everybody. Later in the show, I can't wait to have this conversation with Dr. Ernie Ward. A controversial one, yes, but it's one that must be had. Is that proper grammar? It's one that we must have. How's that? And that is to talk about the relationship between spay-neuter, which we need to do for pets, right? And overweight and obese pets. We'll talk with the founder of the National Association for Pet Obesity Prevention, Dr. Ernie Ward. I think you know his name, John Provost. If you don't, you know this name for sure. Timmy from Lassie. This is the guy. Hey, how you doing, John? I think the last time you and I were in person together was at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, and the director at that time, or president, whatever Bruce Dumont's title was, he said, there's only one guy we need to bring in if we've got Lassie in town, and that's me. And you and I met, we had a conversation with an live audience there, and we talked about and reminisced about your days as Timmy on Lassie. Do you happen to remember that?
Oh, yes, I do. That was a few years ago, but yeah, that memory is still good.
May I ask how old you are now? It'll age all of us.
Okay, yes, on March the 12th, I turned 74 years old, but
wow.
It's really the new 74 is like the new 54 or something. I don't know.
Something like that, and that's, that's understandable, and that's true, but my point of asking you that question is, I don't think there's a person that hasn't seen you. I can name like six people. I don't know who they would be. Johnny Carson, Lucille Ball, whoever. And you would be one of them. I don't know anyone. I mean, have you ever met anyone at a party or wherever you're at who has no idea who Lassie was?
I have no, and I have never met anyone that came up to me and said, John, I hated Lassie. It never happened. But, you know, Steve, I still am on. We are on. Lassie is on in over a half a dozen cable networks in the States and in over 50 countries in reruns.
I hope you're getting some of those residuals.
Don't make me laugh. No. Haven't received a residual from Lassie in over 45 years.
Yeah, the rules were way different back then.
Yeah, we were just kind of left out in the cold. But it's not just me, you know. It's my three sons, Leave It to Beaver, you know, all of those shows. And, you know, we're all in the same boat. But, hey, it was fun. We enjoyed it. And people are still enjoying it. And that's the most important thing.
Well, knowing you, I believe what you say. By the way, do you guys hang out together, the My Three Sons and Leave It to Beaver people and Lassie? And all,
do
you guys?
Yes, we do, as a matter of fact. No, we all grew up together. Stan Livingston from My Three Sons and his brother Barry, and, you know, Keith Thibodeau, who played Little Ricky on I Love Lucy, you know. We all grew up together. We all knew each other. We may not have seen each other regularly or worked together, but whenever we would see each other at an event, a parade, or, you know, something, it was like, hey, I know you. You know, we all grew up together. We're part of the same, club, I guess you might say.
Yeah, the Cheated from Residual Club, I think it's
there
called.
You go.
So that was
an interesting story. When Ronald Reagan was president, not of the U.S., before that of Screen Actors Guild, my union, across his table came the question about residuals for people that had, you know, done early TV series. And he decided to draw a line, and the line was the year 1964. So it wasn't in your contract before 1964. You got nothing. But everybody that made a series after 64 got residuals in perpetuity. So I don't know why he left us out, but that's the way it goes.
Well, I guess you didn't vote for that president.
No.
All right, so you played Lassie at first when you were how old?
7 to 14, 249 half-hour episodes.
And there were other Timmys, weren't there?
Well, there was Jeff. Tom Reddick. Yeah, he played Jeff Miller, and that was before me. He played the show for 3 years, from 54 to 57. And he was old. He wanted out. And so they wanted to bring in a new kid, and they found cute little John Provost, and that was me.
And John Provost is who I think most of us, maybe because of reruns more often when you were in the role, but for whatever reason, most of us, I think of you in that role.
You know, that is true, Steve, because, well, for one, when I was in the series, they didn't show Tommy's Lassie in reruns because they figured it would confuse people. So when they eventually did start showing his show in reruns, they changed the title from Lassie to Jeff's Collie because they would be two Lassie reruns with two different kids. It didn't make sense, so they had to change his title.
I never knew that.
It's amazing what you learn on your show.
Yeah, what I learn, yes. So did you love dogs before?
Gosh, yes. I grew up around animals. When I got the part for Lassie, we were living out in Pomona, California, just kind of east of L.A., and we had a horse and a pony and a goat and pigeons and stuff. So, yeah, I grew up around animals and dogs and have always had a dog. But I've always raised them from puppies, and they've always been purebred. Well, the last three dogs that Lori and I have owned have been senior rescues.
Well, I want to talk about that.
Okay.
And also, I want to hear Lassie secrets. We'll divulge them right here. Yes, what was Lassie really like? We'll be the Hollywood Reporter when we come back on WGN. Talking to John Provost, actor who played Timmy on Lassie. Okay, this got to happen to you every day. You know, I'm thinking this is better than insurance for me hosting this radio show, because if something happens to me while I'm talking to you, clearly Lassie will come and rescue me, right? How many times have radio hosts said that to you?
A million times. A million. Well, you know, Steve, if it hadn't been for Lassie, I probably wouldn't be here because, you know, Lassie saved me from all kinds of perils.
What was the craziest peril that Lassie saved you from? Where even as a kid, when you hear about the script or read the script, you say, well, this is wacky.
Okay, yeah, but it came to my mind immediately. Quicksand. Now, you tell me. For one thing, I really don't. I've never come across it in my entire life. But yeah, one time Tim fell in some quicksand. Now we had quicksand on the farm. Don't quite understand that. But yeah, I think that has got to be the strangest, weirdest one.
Okay, so the most common misconception that has been talked about so much is that Lassie, hey girl, you're really calling a male dog. That's
correct.
True, right?
Yes. Of course, Lassie's supposed to be a female, and every Lassie would have puppies on our show. Interesting, because, yes, every Lassie was a male. From the original movie, Lassie Come Home, 1944, with Elizabeth Taylor and Robin McDowell, from then on, every Lassie was a male. Now, the reason that Red Weatherwax told me that he used males was because the males were larger, which is true, more colorful in the animal kingdom, that's true, and they're just more heroic looking. And the other thing was, he said that males were smarter and easier to train than the females.
And you're talking about the trainer who said all that. Now,
yes, Weatherwax. The Weatherwax family has owned, trained, and bred every Lassie since 1940.
All right, we've had him on the show. All right, so what else is there about? How many lassies were there? Well, you were on.
Well, we only had one real lassie at a time. Lassie did have a stand-in, as we all did, and that dog was also Lassie's double. I mean, you know, if Lassie had to swim in a lake, in the early 60s and late 50s, we didn't have handheld hair dryers. You get a collie in the lake and then pull him out, it takes a week to dry. So, you know, we had to have another collie for that. But in my 7 years, I worked with three Maine lassies. I worked with the son of the original for 1 year. That was Tommy's dog. He was old, ready to retire. His son took over. His son wasn't working really well, so Red had to bring in the grandson. And he worked with his father on and off. They kind of mixed them for a year on the set. Then he took over. So the third dog I worked with for 5 years, just the same dog. Steve, I loved that dog. I loved him. We grew up together.
Yeah.
But if I told him to do something, you know, sit, shake hands, whatever, he'd look at me and say, you know, John, you're my friend. You're not my trainer. And he wouldn't do a thing other than whatever Rudd or one of Rudd's assistant trainers would have the dogs do. And, you know, I mean, it had to be that way because the dog would get confused.
Yeah. Did you ever have a collie personally?
Yes, sir. Like I said, I started when I was seven, and Rudd came up to me and he said, look, I don't want you bugging my dog. He said, don't pull his tail, don't ride him, you know, just work with him. And he said, and if you do that, for your eighth birthday, I'll give you a lassie puppy. So you can bet I worked my tail off to be good. And for my eighth birthday, I received a lassie puppy, a male.
Oh.
He was not trained. I named him Rudd after the owner. And he was a great dog, but he was the only large dog that I've ever owned. Everything now has been, we downsized, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and you rescue dogs. Why? It's a silly question in some ways because the answer is clear, but mm-hmm. Why go that route? But what's more, actually, I have a better question. I happen to know you rescue not only dogs, but rescue specifically older dogs. Why is that the case?
Correct. Well, you know, like I said, I've always raised them from puppies and purebreds, and after we lost our last dog quite a few years ago, I said, you know, we looked at each other and said, you know, we got to go for some of these senior dogs. Everybody wants the puppies. So they're just, you know, they're left there. And, you know, why not give them the last few years of their life and make it special? And so our last three dogs have been senior rescues. We, as a matter of fact, the latest one we have, he's almost 13. We will have had him in a week, 1 year.
Hmm.
And he was... you know, he was kind of, it takes a long time, you know, to settle these guys down and let them know that they're, you know, in a new place and not in a cage anymore.
And safe. So what is the most gratifying thing about rescuing older dogs?
Well, you know, just somebody had to give them up for some reason. And maybe, like we found out, the latest dog we have was owned for 12 years. And by a single woman, and she had to give him up because her housing situation changed and she wasn't allowed to have pets. So this poor dog was raised from a puppy. Now he's going, you know, to fosters and to shelters, and, you know, he doesn't know what's going on. And now he's got a new family, and, you know, is this my forever home? I don't know. And so it's all of that, and the anxiety is, you know, extremely high for mm-hmm. them. And you just, you know, getting them situated, it takes time, and it's definitely a lot of work, but the rewards are unbelievable.
What are the rewards? What do you mean?
The love. What they give back to you. I mean, now Casper, he is our dog. He's almost 13. We will have had him a year next week. And if you saw him a year ago and saw him today, you would think he was a different dog.
Hmm.
Just his demeanor, the way he acts. And here's another thing. I love this. Rudd Weatherwax told me, he said, this is, one thing I learned from Rudd was respect for the animals. His way of training was extremely unique. I saw dozens of different trainers, and some of them were horrible, and, you know, but, you know, Rudd's was reward and respect. And the thing that I learned from Rudd was respect for the animals. And, you know, they are. They're just an extension of us.
Yes, I totally agree. Very well put. Do you know about the Gray Muzzle Organization?
No, I don't.
Oh, my goodness. It's graymuzzle.org. I happen to be on their advisory board, but maybe we could twist your arm as well, considering wow. considering your passion, you know, specifically for older dogs and adoption of these older dogs. And that's their mission, is to help older dogs in particular get health care they deserve in shelters and then get adopted to the general public. And
wow.
Yeah, it's a great organization. As I say, I'm honored to be on their advisory board. Graymuzzle.org if you want to learn, or anyone wants to learn more about that organization. All right, so you adopt these dogs. Some of them have a history. And with that, some time come behavior issues. We'll talk about that because I know it's an interest of yours. We are talking to the man who knows the dogs that will save the day. Timmy from Lassie is here. John Provost on WGN. When we come back. This is from the United States Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, and they have issued an investigative notice regarding bearded dragon lizards and salmonella. They have had 15 recent confirmed cases in states that go back, 15 states that go back to January. You know, any reptile can carry salmonella. And it has to do with several different factors. One is that reptiles are more likely to carry salmonella when they're stressed. So keeping a reptile in a proper environment, feeding that reptile properly, that really does make a difference, cleaning water out if that's an issue. However, the other side of that coin is for you to wash your hands thoroughly. CDC is concerned about very young children and also senior citizens with pet reptiles, because they are so susceptible to getting more sick from salmonella, and young kids don't know to wash their hands. So please do that if you have a pet reptile. John Provost is here. He's Timmy from Lassie. I want to talk about rescuing dogs, but before I do that, again, I will be the Hollywood reporter. You worked with a couple of moms, right? You worked with Cloris Leachman at first for just a short period of time. Do you have any memory of working with the actors like her because you were so young?
Sure. Oh, yeah. When I was, you know, I had about 10 movies and some early live television before I started Lassie when I was 7. And the early first two movies, I don't, but oh gosh, yeah, I remember everything, especially Lassie. I mean, I used to watch Lassie on TV when Jeff was on it before, and all I had really done was movies, and so I had no idea I'd ever be there. But when I found out that I'd gotten the part for Lassie, you know, that was insane. I loved it. One thing, when I got the part for Lassie, they knew I could act because of my movies and stuff, so that was all set in stone. But they didn't know how I would get along with Lassie and how Lassie would get along with me because, I mean, come on, see, you know, you can't fake that relationship, and obviously I had it with Lassie. So I went and lived with Lassie and Rudd Weatherwax. He had a 60-acre ranch outside of L.A. Went and lived with them for a long weekend. And then we came back to the studios of the following week and walked into the producer's office. And I like to say when we opened that door and walked in that Lassie gave me two paws up, and I got the job.
Excellent.
My first mother was Cloris Leachman. And now, you know, Cloris Leachman and June Lockhart are just the opposites on the spectrum. And Cloris, after about 3-4 months of filming, decided that she was not going to be baking cookies for this boy and this dog for the next 6 years. So she broke her contract and wanted out. They let her go. Unfortunately, they had to replace the husband Paul Martin, by who is played by a man, John Shepard, great guy. And so one weekend, people were watching Chloris and John as Paul and Ruth Martin. The next weekend, it was June Lockhart and Hugh Riley in those roles. And Steve, the studio didn't get one letter because the people, all they cared about was the kid and the dog.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you could have two Darren Stevens, I guess you could have two of Lassie mom and dogs, too.
Two Lassie's moms. Why not?
Yeah, exactly.
People don't remember the Chloris shows, and it was a half a year. And it's because when we started with June and Hugh, they didn't want, the producers didn't want to show the reruns with Chloris because they figured it would confuse people, and I'm sure it would. So they didn't show those reruns for many, many years. But you can see them now. I'm sure they're on YouTube.
Yeah, knowing Chloris Leachman, she wouldn't have minded them not showing those reruns necessarily, unless she got paid for it, which is another story. But you described that, well, you didn't. All right, now, you're rescuing dogs, you're rescuing older dogs. Some of them come with some baggage, and a dog that has been rehomed just once, we know that dog isn't necessarily more likely to have separation anxiety, which is now maybe the number one behavior problem with dogs. A dog in a shelter may have been given up to the shelter because the dog had separation anxiety.
Correct.
So we don't really know. But what we do know, according to some studies, is that dogs that have been rehomed several times, those dogs are more likely to have separation anxiety. But among the whole population, it occurs. And I know that's something that you have an interest in.
This is true. We, you know, and we've really noticed it in, you know, the past 8, 9, 10 years that we've been adopting seniors. And, you know, I have been looking for years and years and years for a good dog product. I mean, you know, dogs have been my entire life. And couldn't find anything and was looking to something that could help with separation anxiety. And what we came up with in studies was CBD products from the hemp plant. And so what we've developed is, because tried to find some out there, they weren't good enough. We've developed a CBD spray for dogs and or for cats that is just 100% CBD and olive oil. There's no THC in it. There's no other cannabinoids. It's just CBD isolate. And it is amazing what it does for the dogs. And not only does it help in their separation anxiety, but it helps, you know, in the joint issues, arthritis, things like that. I mean, people have been using CBDs, you know, for joint issues and anxiety and for sleep for years. And so one thing I'd like to say is, you know, we always, unfortunately, tested a lot of products on dogs that before we gave them to humans. But I like to say that the CBD product was tested on humans before we gave it to dogs.
Well, and what we also know is dogs that have separation anxiety are more likely prone, far more likely prone, to have at least one or two or three or more other types of anxieties. These dogs are generally anxious. So they may be anxious about car rides. They may be anxious about veterinary visits. They may be anxious about thunderstorms.
Well, how about the 4th of July? You know, I mean, they go crazy. And we've had the product out for a while, and we've gotten exactly that kind of feedback, you know, that my dog used to go crazy when the fireworks would go off. But now, no, it still bothers them, but not to the extent that it did. They're not panting. They're not, you know, being hyper. And that's what you want to get rid of because, you know, I don't like feeling that way either. And why should they?
Yeah. If there's anyone to ask on the planet this question, Timmy is the one to ask, or if you don't mind me saying, John Provost, there's that. What is the best thing about having dogs in your life?
Oh, everything. I mean, I cannot envision a life without dogs. I mean, you know, everything that they do for us, I mean, it's unconditional, you know. And you know, there's that old saying, the more people I meet, the more I like my dog.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's so true. And I have to tell you this one thing. when we were filming, we filmed Lassie 9 months out of the year. And 1 month, at the 10th month, Rudd, Lassie, and I would travel around the United States going to all the major markets, you know, Dallas, Chicago, New York, Peoria, wherever, and you know, promoting the show. Well, Rudd would insist, if there was a children's hospital nearby or in that town, that Timmy and Lassie would go visit. Now, mind you, there were no such thing as service dogs. The only service dogs were guide dogs for the blind. They didn't let dogs into hospitals in the late 50s, early 60s. They didn't let little kids in the hospital, that, you know, unless you were ill.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they would let Timmy and Lassie in. So here I am, 9, 10, 11 years old, going to a hospital, seeing children my age with polio, seeing kids my age that had been in a horrible automobile accident, and they're all in traction, or kids that were in a house fire. And what I saw in their eyes when they saw Timmy and Lassie walk into that room was amazing. And that stayed with me my entire life. And it's, you know, you ask, what can dogs do for us? Well, they can do amazing things, and we know that. And it, I was on the board of governors of Canine Companions for Independence.
Sure.
For 25 years, you know, and just because I know what they can do for us. So if you want to ask me that question again, go ahead.
No, those are service dogs you referred to with Canine Companions for Independence. Therapy dogs you refer to by visiting, and they weren't even given that name when you were doing it. And when you were doing it through up until almost the, really up until the pandemic, it for many, even though there's now data, that data began to happen in the 2000s and even earlier than that, to demonstrate the good that these dogs do, the difference they make for these individuals, adults and kids and everything in between in these hospital settings, as well as nursing homes and independent and assisted living facilities, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
The reading programs and libraries. I mean, the list goes on, and there's data now to support that. But there were at the great, to some extent anyway, a difficult time convincing the institutions, the hospitals, the assisted living centers, et cetera, that these dogs, despite the data, convincing them these dogs did good. Now the reverse is true. And this is what I want to ask you about. Now there's actually a shortage of dogs because everyone wants them. Does that surprise you?
I'm sorry, does that what?
Surprise you.
Oh, it does. You know, I mean, a lot of times, you know, we can't see the forest because of the trees. And I think that's it. You know, people, they envision dogs doing these certain things, and they can't see them, you know, being the amazing healers that they can be. And, yeah, I'm amazed every day by what dogs do for us.
Well, where do we get that product? I failed to ask you that you spoke about earlier for separation anxiety.
Yes, it's at just provostpets.com, provostpets.com, and that's our webpage, and people can order online, or we are getting out there into the stores. So, but right now we're online.
All right. Well, your passion for dogs and for animals in general is palpable. I thank you for that passion and for everything you do. And what a pleasure it is to meet up with you again. I've been trying to convince the Museum of Broadcast Communications that they need an animal wing. Bring in Mr. Ed. Bring in Flipper.
You know, I worked with Mr. Ed.
Really?
Yes, after Lassie, I worked with Mr. Ed. I did a few episodes with Alan Young and Ed. And I hate to tell you, Steve, in your audience, Mr. Ed really didn't talk.
What?
Yeah,
oh, no.
It was, you know, it was Hollywood. What can I say?
What was it, peanut butter? That's what I've heard.
No, it wasn't. Okay, I'll have to. The trainer would tie a little monofilament line, a fishing line, that you couldn't see, under his top teeth. And then when he'd wanted to, he would just tug on that from behind Ed, and it would make him raise his lips. So that
sounds like Mr. Ed was abused a bit.
No. And here's another story.
Quickly.
Loved Mr. Ed, And every day we'd meet him at his stable before he was taken to the studio, and they would go for a ride.
Oh, well, you know what they say, a horse is a horse, of course, of course. Thank you very much, John.
All right. Thank you so much.
Dr. Ernie Ward is the founder and president of the Association for Pet Obesity Prevention, a non-for-profit that does what I suppose the name says you do.
Well, we hope to prevent obesity in pets, Steve, but the reality is we also track it. We do prevalence surveys and give veterinarians and pet parents tools and resources on how to keep their pet at a healthy weight and maybe even lose weight.
So here's a controversial issue. We want to spay and neuter our pets. We want to continue to do that for all sorts of reasons, mainly population control. And at some point, it can be healthy for lots of reasons for our pets to be spayed or neutered. Having said that, there is a price sometimes for some pets to be paid.
Yeah, Steve, I'm really glad you mentioned that. And that's a really important, controversial topic that's
but
been popping up in veterinary medicine for the past decade. And that is, when is the ideal time to have your dog or cat spayed or neutered, right? When you get the most health impacts for that? And traditionally, most of our listeners are going to be used to saying, oh, you do it around 6 months of age, right?
Or even earlier,
4 to 6 months of age. And so that works really great from a population control standpoint. But the health impacts we're now starting to better understand. And some of those health impacts also include things like osteoporosis and ligament damage. So we're seeing a lot of dogs that maybe have ligamentous injuries that are related to early spay neuter. Of course, obesity is what we pay close attention to, but there are a lot of reasons maybe to delay that time of spay and neuter whenever possible. And so what really sets up a lot of dogs and cats for obesity is the fact that they're spayed early, okay, so 4 to 6 months of age, and then we don't really have a good nutritional diet to put them on, right? So a lot of veterinarians will say, well, let's switch you over to an adult diet and just feed less. Well, that could rob the body of essential nutrients. So that's not a great idea. And I'll tell you, you know, what a lot of people do, Steve, is they just feed too much, right? And they continue to feed the wrong food. And I'm really, you know, happy to say there are companies out there doing research and developing tools and therapeutics and diets that actually meet that need. So one of those new products out there is a diet from Virbac. It's specially designed for dogs and cats after they're spayed or neutered. So it has all the macronutrients they need, the proteins and the fats for growth without all those calories. So I'm really happy to see these kind of solutions come to market.
Yeah, I would suggest Europe has been ahead of us on this.
And this is a European company, European product.
Yeah. You know, what we do know is that metabolism also changes after spay and neuter, which you could talk about a bit.
Yeah. In fact, once you remove the, you know, reproductive organs of a dog and cat, their metabolic rate or requirements for calories goes down about 30%. So 20 to 30% calories fewer are needed. And so this is a difficult thing for pet owners, right? We don't know what that means. We know that they need to be fed less, but they still got to grow. So you can see now what we're talking about. Okay, if you're going to feed them during this period and they've been spayed at 4 to 6 months of age, you've got to make sure you meet those nutritional demands, but also not just loading them up with calories. So I think it's a fascinating solution, you know. And on the other end of this too, Steve, I mean, don't forget, we have some fantastic therapeutic diets. So like, let's say now you've got a two-year-old dog who needs to lose some weight. Well, you've got, you know, fantastic products from companies like Purina and Hill's and so forth. I mean, just amazing therapeutic diets that can help.
And what you mean by that are prescription diets.
Yeah, I mean, that's a term that a lot of us use,
right?
You know, prescription, therapeutic. These are diets that are specially formulated to meet those nutritional demands, the needs, but not at the cost of calories and excess fat. So these are clever. You know, they also, many of these companies will add different supplements to those foods, maybe to enhance metabolism or fat absorption. And so, you know, there's other manipulations they can use. It's a very, very creative space.
And you're not dissing spay neuter, but the thing you didn't, to be clear, but the thing you didn't mention is that, yes, many pets from 4 to 6 months. However, many, many, increasing number, and rightly so in many ways, even, especially cats, even younger than that.
Right. And in a shelter.
Way younger than that.
And Steve, I completely support that in a shelter setting, right?
Right.
So because we have to get a grip and get control of the pet overpopulation problem in the United States.
And that's what I'm talking about. But then they're adopted out.
Right.
And their metabolism has changed perhaps even more.
Exactly. So you've got to be mindful of this. There are some diets like Virbac, and I expect to see others in the market soon that are following the same science. But again, you know, getting back to that, if you have a dog or cat and it's a puppy, you know, you want to talk to your vet about when is the right time, and it may be later than you previously thought.
Exactly. Association for Pet Obesity Prevention. The website is
petobesityprevention.org.
Seems easy. Dr. Ernie Ward, thank you.
Thank you.
The American Veterinary Medical Association and I have been out there on the stump talking about telemedicine or telehealth and why it's such a good idea, but only if you have a relationship, a veterinary patient-client relationship with that veterinary practice or your specific veterinarian. Here's why. The records, they've got the records. They know your pets. And if they don't know you, and if they don't know your pets personally, at least they have that information in front of them. These direct-to-consumer opportunities are not necessarily opportunities. It is for the company. They make money, but they may misdiagnose your pet. And if they do, you have little recourse, in fact, if that person you're talking with is out of state or out of country, which happens, believe it or not, then you can do nothing about it. Moreover, how do they know what's really wrong without getting their hands on your pet? Think twice before you do telehealth and make sure it's with someone you know. Then it's a good idea. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.